Welcome to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or Pandora, or head on over to AmericaOutLoud.com and check out all the great articles and podcasts, and please share them. So we always appreciate it when you share the articles and podcasts, and if you do go to AmericaOutLoud.com and check those out, you will be busy for countless of hours because there are hundreds of hours of podcast and tons of great articles. You guys definitely want to check that out. Thank you again for joining us tonight. Last night, we started our year in review show, and we're going to continue along with that tonight. We've got friend of the show, Heather Robinson, who's going to be joining us to break that all down. So we're looking forward to breaking down the top 10 stories of 2021. We hope that you all are having a great holiday week and have a fantastic New Year's Eve. First off, let me kick off to Rob. How are you doing tonight?
Andrew, I'm doing great. And as you said, I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to one of our almost final shows of the year. I'm glad that you guys are joining us tonight. And Andrew, I'm also glad that Heather is joining us to help us break down all the top stories. She's going to give her insight. So without further ado, Andrew, go for it.
Okay, let's give you a recap of last night's show first. Our 20 through 11. At number 20, we voted in Brian Laundrie and Gabby Petito. At number 19, the John Durham investigation. Number 18, the new woke military and its changes. Number 17, Jesse Smollett was guilty on all charges. Number 16, we talked about how Kamala Harris has been an abject failure. 15, Kim Potter, guilty. Number 14, Joe Biden sworn in. Number 13, the Let's Go Brandon chants explode into well-known pop culture reference. Number 12, the Cuomo brothers get canceled. Andrew gets removed as governor and Chris gets fired from CNN. And number 11, the left's attacks on Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Tonight, we'll be breaking down the top 10. Number 10, Joe Biden's key legislation, Build Back Better, fails. Joe Manchin's critical vote killed the legislation. I don't really know anybody who's too disappointed about it. Most of the people I know are pretty happy. But Rob, what were your thoughts on Build Back Better being a failure?
Andrew, you know that we talked about this slightly on last night, and that we're saying how we should not automatically assume that he's on our side, meaning the side of the right. And I know a lot of people are saying, well, Mitch McConnell should try to convince him to come over. That's not going to help us. It'll give us one more vote, but we still have to realize that he's still a Democrat. He's a Democrat in a red state that overwhelmingly voted for Joe Biden. So I think what we see here is that he voted in line with his constituency. This is what they wanted. And he delivered. Now, it's unfortunate that the Democrats can't see that, and they're going full throttle to attack the poor man in the most vicious way by saying that he's a racist. Now, had he voted the way they wanted him to, would he be a racist then? These are the things, I'm serious, this is what people need to really look at that they're not looking at. Mm-hmm. That how is it overnight he became a racist? Mm-hmm. Because he didn't want that bill. Like, they're coming on TV one by one. Ilhan Omar, oh, he's a racist. Oh, we knew he didn't like Black people. Oh, we knew this. AOC saying the same thing. Oh, we can't count on him. And Bernie Sanders, bring the vote to the floor so that people can see the way he voted. Bernie, he was on TV and he told you it was a no vote. Why does he need to go on the floor? This is all theatrics. But to call the man a racist simply because he's living by his beliefs, his values, and supporting his constituency. And that is the reason why I say this whole word race, what's racism, this is racism. They have diluted the meaning of the word. And it's mm-hmm. most unfortunate because racism does exist. It doesn't exist on the level that the Democrats would like to say that it exists. Everything isn't about race simply because I don't agree with you. You can be white and not agree with me, a Black man. That doesn't make you a racist. It just says that, hey, you don't believe some of the things, you don't share my values. You know, we all have good values, but when it comes to things like the economy or social issues, that's what I'm looking for, social issues. That doesn't mean that it makes you a racist, but according to the Democrats, it does. And it just makes no sense.
I think you're right, Rob. And I think it's a great point. If Manchin had voted their way, you know, would he be a racist the next day? Absolutely not. It's just about political power, the words tossed at people. There's no longer any evidence required to really prove such a terrible thing about someone. And we saw it with President Trump too. I mean, is President Trump, was he really more racist than Joe Biden? I could read you several Joe Biden quotes that I think are pretty racist. I don't think there were as many of those kinds of quotes coming out of Trump's mouth, and we know he was very outspoken, but evidence and facts and logic don't matter. It's just what the liberal media and the left decides, it is. Racism is becoming a weapon to the charge of racism is like what it used to be to call someone a communist, I guess, in the 1950s, maybe. You didn't really need a lot of proof and you could ruin somebody with it. So I think that your example is brilliant. And it really, it perfectly illustrates that this is really about the left getting its way. Whoever does what they want is an ally, a friend. Whoever doesn't is a racist. Terrible.
Yeah, well said. One of the top three stories from last year had to be the death of George Floyd and the rioting and unrest that unfolded afterwards. Well, in 2021, it turned out that was all unfounded because Officer Derek Chauvin was guilty on all charges. Kind of seems like they should have waited before they rioted because the justice they were hoping for ended up happening. And now Officer Chauvin will be in prison the rest of his life. This story I almost even forgot happened in 2021. It seems so long ago at this point. But Officer Chauvin is locked up for life. Rob, what are your thoughts?
Well, for one, Andrew, I like the way you pronounce his last name, Chauvin. It's like the French word, Chauvin. I say Chauvin, you say Chauvin. I like that. but I agree with what you're saying. They got what they wanted. He was found guilty. We have to respect the decision, the justice system, the jurors. I, for one, felt that he should have been found guilty. Taking a step back, George Floyd is not a hero. George Floyd is not a martyr. George Floyd should not be put in the pantheons of the likes of Martin Luther King or Rosa Parks or Medgar Edwards or any of the other civil rights leaders who lost their lives. He was not a civil rights icon, nor will he be. Now, the left, they want to make him out to be this icon. When you look at this guy's life, the life that he lived is anything but that of a civil rights icon. He was not out in the streets trying to rally the cause for social justice, equal opportunities. He wasn't doing any of that. What he was doing was being high on drugs, put a gun to the stomach of a pregnant woman. He had a troubled life living in a Democrat city who, if the laws had been different, he would probably still be here today. If things were different, he would probably have a job. He would have had a job. He should have stayed in Texas, the red state, but he moved to the blue state. So that's neither here or there. But I think that what happened to Derek Chauvin, all he had to do was to lift his knee off the neck of the man. Now, he was probably caught up in the moment. I don't know. I don't know his thoughts. I don't know what he was thinking. But I will say this, the knee that was on George Floyd's neck is the same knee that the Democrats have on the neck of Black people, oppressing them, holding them down, having them to think that the only way they can survive or do anything is with the help of the liberal. And that's got to stop, the help of the Democrats. There are so many accomplished Black people that are out there. I mean, Oprah Winfrey, look at the athletes, Clarence Thomas, Tim Scott, Brian Donald, all these Condoleezza Rice, all of these accomplished Black people. Even Kamala Harris, although she's horrible at her job, but I mean, look at how did she get to where she is? Did someone have their knee on her neck? Or did she believe in herself and said, I can do this? No, of course, she will tell you that, oh, I had to do this and I went through this and I went through that, you know, all trying to get emotions from people. But if the Democrats take their knees off the necks of Black people and allow them to prosper, they would do so much better. George Floyd would have done so much better had he not been oppressed by the laws of the left. But like you said, Andrew, they got the verdict that they want. And now this man is put away for life.
Yeah, I think you said it well, Rob. You know, the jury did its job and that case is closed. And I think, you know, it probably was a just verdict. The other thought I have about it is just related. The Tree of Life shooter has still not been tried. And I don't know why that is. But, you know, despite the outpouring of concern, much of which I do believe was sincere for the Jewish community in the aftermath of that, and the supposed fear and terror of the white supremacist, which I actually think that person, maniac who committed that massacre, I don't know exactly if he was a white supremacist. He was a nativist. He did have extremist views. He was not a Trump supporter, by the way. But I think that he and Dylann Roof are a couple examples of, you know, actual white supremacists or people of that ilk. You know, I actually believe, though, that the, you know, terrible as these individuals are and these horrific cases are, personally, I believe that the fear, the specter of white supremacy in this country, I'm not dismissing it, but I think it's overstated. And I think the fact that the man has not even been tried yet is an indicator. I mean, dare I say, I don't know that the left is really as petrified as they claim to be, because I don't know why that man hasn't come to trial. It's been over 3 years. So I did want to mention that. But, you know, it's good that the George Floyd, you know, trial happened with, you know, alacrity, and that our justice system did perform its function and the jurors did their jobs.
Number 8, Joe Biden's plummeting approval rating. In just 1 year, according to Rasmussen polls, he started off at 54% approval. Now that is down to anywhere between 34 and 36% approval rating. I mean, this is a drastic drop in just a year. We're looking at Jimmy Carter level inflation so far, the border, some of these things we're still going to get to. But Joe Biden's first year in office has been a complete disaster. And he does not seem very popular with the American people. This is the same guy they say got 81 million votes. Rob, what are your thoughts on Joe Biden's first year in office?
I'm surprised his approval ratings aren't at 20 or the teens.
In a lot of areas, it is, like the economy.
I want it there overall. This guy has done absolutely nothing to benefit the country, to unify the country. Absolutely nothing. Now, some would say, well, what did Trump do? He talked. He was always on Twitter. Okay, actions speak louder than words. My parents always told me that. My grandparents told me that. My teachers and college professors told me that. You can say anything you want to say, but I'm looking at your actions, actionable items. And if you're doing something that's constructive, that's going to impact me in a positive way, hey, I'm all for you. You don't have to whisper lovey-doveys in my ear, although I would like to hear that, Andrew. But you don't have to do it. If I see what you're doing in actionable items, Heather, that's what I'm going to appreciate, because then I know this person is serious about what they're doing. You look at Joe Biden. He talked a big talk. Now he's saying that it's up to the states to handle the COVID crisis. Now, in 2020, he was lamenting and attacking Trump, saying that, oh, no, it should be the federal government and the federal government should do this. And all these people believed it. The federal government. I'm like, wait a minute, folks, do you know what the Constitution says about state rights? It was as though it just went over their heads that never existed. So what has Biden done? I mean, he failed in Afghanistan. We're going to talk about that. 13 soldiers killed. Look at the border, a complete disaster. And I was asking a liberal friend of mine, just tell me one thing that he's done. And they couldn't. They kept lamenting, well, Trump, 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 Trump. I'm like, he's no longer president. We have a new resident in the White House. What has that man done? They couldn't tell me anything. And it's really sad, because no one can tell you anything. They will always deflect. Now, that being said, I will help them. He has done something that was constructive and positive. almost toward the end of the year, he finally gave Trump credit for coming up with the vaccines with Operation Warp Speed. He gave Trump credit for coming out and saying that not only was he vaxxed, but he also took the booster. But after he did it, he started attacking him so that people will say, oh, that's right, Trump didn't do anything. So his ratings, to me, should be completely down in the dumps because he has done absolutely nothing but been a complete embarrassment. I want the country to succeed, but the policy that he wants to build back better and all this other stuff, I don't want any part of it because it would be disastrous for our country, Heather. Completely disastrous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Rob, to me, I have to say, you know, I'm one of those who believes in respecting the office. I know you do too. And I, you know, I've sort of held my tongue as a writer too. I haven't written much about Biden because I want to respect the office. And to be honest, I also kind of feel like he's very weak. He comes across that way. It's almost to me like nobody is president. It just feels like this weird malaise, like we're drifting, slowness. To be honest, there's a little element of relief in it for me because the overt drama and contention, the meanness of some on the left, the viciousness of some of the attacks, the personal attacks on myself, my family, my friends, you know, what you experienced getting banned from certain sites. I mean, the prejudice against Trump supporters. People don't realize, you know, look, I'm not comparing it to, you know, I'm not going to do what the leftists do and act like I'm part of the resistance and like this is, they make a mockery of true resistance to real tyranny. I'm not saying this was, you know, bona fide oppression or something, but it was, you know, for those of us who supported the former president, it was a time we could lose work, we could lose friends, we could lose, opportunities. I mean, there was a kind of bigotry in the air. And now that Biden is in charge, it's like, I think the country in many ways is the worst for it. I agree with you that he's done very little. Things are drifting. The economy's bad. The border's out of control. Afghanistan was a disaster. But, you know, at least the left got what it wanted and they have settled down a little bit. And I have to say, selfishly, there's a little relief in that because I and the people I care about, some of them anyway, are not getting attacked every day in social situations. We're not seeing our cities on fire and being told that it's really peaceful. There's a kind of malaise and slowness. I am concerned about the future. But, you know, I just hope I hope we don't get hit also, because I feel like the country is weak now and America's enemies have to know it. And I'm a little bit surprised we haven't been. Yeah. And generally, his whole presidency reminds me, from what I can remember as a very tiny girl, of Jimmy Carter's, maybe a little worse.
Well said, Heather. Number 7 on the list is Kyle Rittenhouse, innocent on all charges. Of course, the leftists were not very happy about that, but the jury looked into the case. They looked at the video and decided it was self-defense. It seemed like a pretty clear-cut case if you actually sat down and watched the footage, but it was amazing how many people would go on mainstream media and personally attack Kyle Rittenhouse as a racist or as a murderer and all these other accusations they made towards him. And it was clear to me that they probably did not watch much of the trial. Rob, what are your thoughts?
Well, for one, I want everyone to understand this and to be clear. Kyle Rittenhouse is not a hero. He's not a martyr. He's just Kyle Rittenhouse, who was defending his life. Plain and simple. That's it. We don't need to go out and put him up on pedestals or put him on coins or whatnot. No, he was just protecting himself. Now, if we want to say he's a hero based upon that, okay, fine. But as far as the true heroes, people who have like really done things, no. And we're not going to go that far. And I don't think that anyone on the right would do that. Now, there are some who are always looking for something. And I can understand that, especially if the right is going to say, not the right, but the left is going to say George Floyd is a hero. But we're better than that. He was fighting for his life and he won. And this, in my opinion, should have never been brought to court. I mean, it was the mob again. You have the mob once again acting out, demanding, we want him. Want him for what? What did he do? He didn't kill any black people. No, a lot of people think that he did to this day. When I first heard the case, Heather and Andrew, I thought he had killed someone black. And then when I studied the story, because what happens is that the media just put all this stuff out there, and you start thinking, oh my God, who did he kill? He killed a black person. How could he? Why did he? My viewpoint was that what happened? Who did he kill? What was going on? I thought he was going to help. And then when I found out that the people that were killed, they were trying to kill him and they were trying to beat the crap out of him. A 17-year-old boy who was out trying to protect businesses because the men have been terrified and told, you better not come out because if you do, we got something for you. So this 17-year-old boy is coming out to defend. And yes, he had every right to have that gun. And the people that were trying to kill him, a child molester who had been in jail, another guy who had beaten up his family, and then the third guy who lived was probably on drugs, thinking he sold drugs. So when I heard what happened, I'm like, okay, it's unfortunate, but let's move on. But the mob wanted their own justice. They wanted to tell the story their way, along with the media. They did the same thing to Nicholas Sandman. And look at what happened. CNN made him a millionaire. NBC made him a multimillionaire, and rightfully so. Because when you're going to go after these young kids, because you don't like the fact that they're standing up to these adults, then this is what should happen. I hope Kyle Rittenhouse sues them, and he deserves to win, because what they did to him was completely unfortunate. A kid attacking a kid is horrible, but this is what our society on the left has come to. They don't care who you are. If you do not bend the knee for them, Heather, they're going to come after you.
You know, Rob, something you said really touched a nerve with me. You said, these young boys standing up when men are not.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to overstate it. I mean, there are men like you guys who are brave in terms of what you say, which is no small thing in this climate. But I, you know, it occurred to me when the Nick Sandman story broke, which may have been in, you know, the previous year, I guess, but some of the viciousness of these commentators and people, mostly men, actually online. And I thought to myself, maybe I blogged about it at the time. Maybe part of the reason they were so vicious is they were on some level, they know they don't have the backbone to do what that kid did. All he did was not cower, you know, and he also kept his cool. And, you know, these are men who spend their time, you know, on Twitter all day long. Maybe it sounds a little anachronistic of me, but there are moments I wonder, where is the manhood? You know, I mean, especially on the left side, I mean, they're not only are they brainwashed, they probably hate these people because these are people who are able to stand alone, demonstrate the kind of courage that is required to stand alone, which I personally think is the biggest kind of courage there is, you know, not to take anything away from people who are brave in battle, who are brave, you know, as part of a team. That's necessary and great. But I personally believe in, you know, it's one of the reasons I love you guys. I think that to stand alone physically, or even if it isn't physical, morally, just to be out there in with your views and be reviled and mischaracterized, I think that's, it's one, not one in 100 people who has the courage to do that. And I think that this leftist mindset is the antithesis of that. I mean, it's a mob thing. It's a groupie thing where if you become part of it, you're protected, and so I think these cases, it just strikes me, and I hadn't thought of it this way until you said it, Rob, I hadn't exactly linked them. But you have two young men, and I hear what you're saying about Rittenhouse not being a hero, but I'm not going to go so far as to call him a hero because I don't know what was in his head. But I think if it's true that his intent was really genuinely to try to defend this community, I think there is a kind of heroism in that. I mean, I wasn't in the boy's head. You know, I don't know if he was a daredevil or what. And I think, you know, we know the fact is he was defending himself in that moment. I agree with you. And that we know. But I think that he may be a kind of hero. And say so maybe Nick Sandman, at a time when most grown men are too cowed, even if they see the madness of this groupthink, to stand up to it. And we're grown women too, you know, maybe it's the wisdom of babes, you know, the kind of clarity and the vigor of youth that isn't, you know, cowed by this, what would you call it? It's the leftist, the jaws of the leftist machine.
Yeah, well said, Heather. I completely agree. You're tuned into After Dark with Rob and Andrew, available on America Out Loud via iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or download the America Out Loud app to keep track of all the great shows. We'll be back with more from our special Year in Review show with the top six stories of the year. Stay tuned.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Liberty and the pursuit of 2022 is upon us. Happy New Year, my fellow Americans. It was Bill Vong who reminded us, an optimist stays up until midnight to see the new year in. A pessimist stays up to make sure the old year leaves. Here's to all being an optimist. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to After Dark with Rob and Andrew, and we are here with our special Year in Review show. We're doing our top 20 countdown of top stories of 2021. We started last night and couldn't get them all in, so we are continuing tonight. We've got Heather Robinson on with us breaking it down. We'll give you guys a quick review of where we at so far. Number 20, Brian Laundrie and Gabby Petito. Number 19, the John Durham investigation. Number 18, the woke military. Number 17, Jesse Smollett, guilty on all charges. Number 16, Kamala Harris, failure as vice president. Number 15, Kim Potter, guilty on all charges. 14, Joe Biden, sworn into office. Number 13, the Let's Go Brandon chant explodes into well-known pop culture reference. Even a song about it went top on the charts. The Cuomo brothers get canceled is number 12. Number 11 is the left's attacks on Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Number 10, Joe Biden's key legislation, Build Back Better, fails. Number 9, Derek Chauvin, guilty on all charges in the death of George Floyd. Number 8, Joe Biden's plummeting approval rating in just 1 year goes from 54% to 36%. Number 7, Kyle Rittenhouse was innocent on all charges. And the number 6 story of 2021 is the border crisis that is spiraling out of control. It is pretty crazy. We have 5 stories that are bigger than this because this has been a constant all year round. And it kind of goes back to Kamala Harris and perhaps why she has been so unpopular is because Joe Biden completely threw her under the bus when he put her in charge of this border, when we all know that the Biden administration has open border policies and they were doomed for failure. President Trump actually had immigration or illegal immigration down, and now Biden's got it up. Over 1.5 million illegals have flooded into our country already this year. Rob, what are your thoughts on the border crisis?
Well, I'll say this, Andrew. When Trump left office, he left office given Biden like a gift. The economy was booming. Even with COVID-19, we didn't have a supply chain issue. And the border was intact. He had spoke with the Mexico government, the Mexican government president, and said, hey, this is what you got to do. Keep them there. They don't need to come here. And if you can't do it, we're going to look rethink our deals with you, our trading deals. So he took a look at it and said, okay, we're going to do it. As soon as Biden came in, one of the first things he did was to tear up that agreement, to stop building the wall. And just sure enough, as the sun rises in the east and then comes all the way up to the west, we had an influx of illegals coming across our border. And not just from Mexico. They were coming by way of Mexico. But you had Venezuelans. You had people from Afghanistan, from Africa, even Haiti, all over. And embedded in that group were terrorists. Now, people derided President Trump when he came down the elevator. The escalator, rather, and he said that the people that the Mexicans are sending here is not their finest, that they're rapists, they're drug addicts, et cetera, et cetera. Now, people listened to that and took that to mean that he was calling them all rapists, all bad guys, but he wasn't.
I'm going to interrupt you, Rob. I just wanted to insert that he, in that same exact statement, he said, and some of them, I'm sure, are nice people.
Yes, I'm glad you said
that. Which always gets dropped from the quote, you know.
Always, yep. They always drop them.
Backwards to add that there were some, you know, nice people.
Right. And he, and like you said, they drop it and they only focus on the other part. So Trump gave to Biden a border that was intact, but because of his own inability to stand up to his party and say, we need to keep what we're doing because it's working, he decided not to. And sure enough, again, as the sun rises in the east, he came back and said, that was the best solution. And quiet as it's kept, they decided to revisit it and said, no, Mexico, you've got to keep those people there. And a federal judge came out and said, we need to enact that plan because it worked. But quiet as it's kept, the media will not say anything about it. You know why? Because they don't want to give Trump credit, Heather. They don't want to come out and say, guys, we probably didn't like it, but he got it right. Now, that's after millions have come across. We don't know where they are. We know that Biden is trying to plant them into red states, but it worked, just like so many other things worked, just like the idea of the state should handle the COVID crisis. It worked, and now he's saying, okay, let's do it that way. So now he's saying, okay, it worked. Keeping the Mexicans there, it actually worked. But quiet as is kept because they don't want to give him a win.
I think you're right. And it really disturbs me as a humanitarian. All along, I've felt that this hysterical demonization of our border policies, of our border patrol agents, of the facilities where children and others were housed and continue to be housed for their own protection, has the demonizing of all of this, the villainizing and distorting of it has masqueraded as humanitarian concern. I have maintained all along it is not true humanitarian concern. Most of the people who were in a lather over children allegedly being kept in so-called cages, which was an exaggeration and a distortion, don't understand that there are far worse things that can happen and are happening to children than being temporarily protected in a secure facility. Now we have a situation where there's almost certainly a dramatic increase in child trafficking and trafficking of women. I wrote about this for the New York Post about 6 months ago. I interviewed some retired Border Patrol agents who were willing to speak to me because they are retired and they can speak freely. And I also spoke with Laura Logan, who's on the border, who had interviewed a lot of the current Border Patrol agents who said they were under inhuman pressure once Biden came into office to push families, so-called families, through within 3 days. They told her they had nightmares. They were terrified because that they could be letting children into the hands of traffickers because there is no way to properly vet people coming with children. And now, basically at that time, the policy had been liberalized so that anybody coming with a child had to be let through with that child within 3 days, assuming, you know, there was no total smoking gun that the child was being abused. But as Laura Logan told me, no one is tracking these children. A lot of things look very suspicious to our Border Patrol agents, which they personally told her, but they are powerless to detain these people, you know, some of whom are almost certainly traffickers. So, you know, this whole idea that we are being humane to just let people come across our borders with children, and that the most inhumane thing is to detain so-called families, you know, really is just I think that there may be a few people who are sincere about it, who are naive, you know, who are concerned about children. They're naive because they believe the worst thing that can happen to a child is being temporarily separated from his or her parent in a secure facility. If they really think that, they have no idea what's really happening to children. A lot of these children, one woman I interviewed who was in Mexico, who devotes her life to protecting children, running an organization to protect them, told me she estimated 60% of the children coming across the border, many of them alone, are either being sex trafficked, being used as drug mules, or just, you know, have been abandoned. 60% of these children, you know, are not being cared for. And that has been incentivized by these so-called liberal policies. So I think it's, you know, a disaster on a humanitarian level. And, you know, I really am sick and tired of liberals pretending that they have the moral high ground with this when they have enabled a horrible situation for children.
Well said, Heather. Number five, this is something that I'm incredibly, I hear about all the time personally when I go to work. Anytime you get gas, inflation in America, we see it all over the place. Prices have gone up. I went to the Dollar Tree the other day and it is officially the $1.25 tree. It's a real shame, but prices are going up and wages are not in a lot of places. Rob, what is your thoughts on the inflation that we are seeing under Joe Biden?
Contrary to what CNN, MSNBC, Washington Post, and the New York Times are reporting, inflation is not good. It is all bad. It is always bad. Inflation is never, ever good. So although they're trying to re-spin this and they're trying to tell you, oh, we're paying a little bit more, it's okay. You can pay with all the money that you saved up when you were house arrest, locked up. It is not good. Don't believe what you hear. And I'm sad to hear that, Andrew, about the Dollar Tree, because I love that store. It's now the $1.25. And I always lamented about these dollar stores, like Dollar General and Family Dollar. When you go inside, it's $1.50 or $5 or $6. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought you said it was the Dollar General. But the Dollar Tree was the one and true store whereby everything was a dollar. Everything was a dollar. So needless to say, people would go there and stock up. Now it's the $1.25 store. And that is a result of Joe Biden's policies or lack of policies with inflation.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. Every like three items or four items cost you an extra dollar. I mean, that adds up if you get a lot of items, particularly for the poor people who do shop there. Heather, what are your thoughts on the inflation in America that we are seeing under Joe Biden?
Well, you know, it's very concerning. I think of other examples in history. I'm no expert at economics, but I know that when goods start to lose their value, I mean, when the money starts to lose its value, then it's not a good thing. And it's just very concerning, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. Number four story of the year. I know a lot of people would have this as their number one story, but there's so many other big things to talk about. I have this ranked at number four. Chaos breaks out on January 6th after the Stop the Steal rally. No matter how you look at it, This was a big story, and people have been talking about it. A lot has happened since then. We know about the committees. The House committee is set up kind of like the 9/11 committee. I think the comparisons to 9/11 are completely asinine. But Rob, what are your thoughts on the chaos on January 6th? To me, it seemed like a situation where it's what happens when you don't listen to a group of people. I mean, we've seen that with the rioting in 2020. The people that were out rioting felt like they were not being listened to or taken seriously. And I feel like the same thing happened on January 6th. But Rob, what are your thoughts?
Briefly, my thoughts. It was not an insurrection. No one has been charged with insurrection. I think it's an over-prosecution of the individuals. Maybe what they did wasn't wrong, but I viewed it as a frat boy prank. We're always telling people in other countries, if you feel that you're not being heard, you don't like what your government is doing, you should rise up. The moment they rise up here in the United States, we treat them as if they're criminals. We look at what happened back when Brett Kavanaugh was being selected as Supreme Court. We had a group to go in and claw at the doors of the Supreme Court. They were trespassing, clawing at the doors. Some of them went and camped out in the halls of the Senate because they didn't want them to vote. You look at the spring and summer of 2020, when you have all the rioting and federal buildings were being burned. No one was prosecuted. Now, until we can get our arms around that, why are we talking about Jan 6? Why are these judges, liberal judges and activist judges, and in some cases, conservative judges are treating us as if, though, this is the worst thing that ever happened. When we look at history in 1972, we had a group to bomb the halls of the Senate. We've got to put things into perspective. Simple as that. That's my thought.
Yeah, I mean, I would. The only thing I would say is to the difference with you at all, Rob, is that I totally agree that this is the liberal media's favorite day, I would say. They are going to focus on it and continue to, because it is the one and really, I think, the only real example of conservatives in this country behaving badly, you know, recently over politics. You know, we had, of course, 6 months of, you know, chaos, mayhem, arson, intimidation, all across America, that was rationalized, downplayed. As Andrew said, it was all about, we need to understand people's feelings. This is being treated with a marked and complete double standard. It amazes me that liberals can't see that. I mean, I don't know, can they really not see it? Or, I mean, if they're, the funny thing is, many of them seem genuinely upset. And I get it. It was upsetting. This was a riot. I mean, it was a mob scene. I think that people, I hear you, that people felt they had, you know, grievance and they have the right to protest. I think things pretty clearly took a bad turn. But, and it happened to be in, you know, the halls of Congress. And I think some of it has to do with, yes, the fact that it was a mob attack on, you know, a symbol of our government. I get it. And, you know, and it was potentially an attack on our legislators, which is serious. And I guess in terms of, you know, the way things are viewed in the world, because these are high status people who are our elected officials, it has to be taken seriously. But I agree with you guys that, you know, and as Bibi said so eloquently one night on this show, you know, what about the insurrection against the American people that went on in the spring and summer of 2020, that, you know, long after it had descended from peaceful protest into violence? How many people were caught in the crossfire? How many people killed, businesses burned, federal buildings torched, police officers attacked, symbols of our government, of our, you know, country, our statues toppled? I mean, I think that we were told that we had to stand down. And not only that, we had to not acknowledge the destruction. We had to pretend this was all glorious and okay and peaceful. I think there was a really deep rift. Something happened there. I mean, I think people really stopped trusting government, media, because we knew that what we saw before our own eyes, we were told not to believe. We were told, you know, violence was peace, that, you know, violence was justice. It was Orwellian. And I think that once that happened, I actually think a lot of the distrust now, some of it anyway, about the vaccines, may be in some way related to that. A lot of people, conservative Americans, knew they were being lied to about that. And so they started thinking, well, maybe we're being lied to about the next thing and the next thing. I happen to be pro-vaccine. I think the vaccines are safe. I don't believe in mandates, but I think a kind of hysteria has taken hold that I think, in a sense, the left, you know, bears a lot of responsibility for, because they did lie. They lied about the riots that went on for 6 months. They told, you know, us that, you know, it wasn't what it was. And yes, and then January 6th, I think, was, you know, a boiling up, an expression of some of that frustration. It was wrong. It was violent. You know, I'm not going to do what they do and pretend that it wasn't, or that it was okay. It wasn't. You know, but I think that they focus on it because it gives them cover for all of the hysteria they have sown about conservatives. The truth is, conservatives in this country and moderates put up with a lot for years. We put up with being told that because of our choice of president, we were racist. We put up with, you know, in many cases, fear in our own communities. People in the inner cities of this country who didn't join the mob, some of whom I've spoken to, were terrified in their own communities, you know. And I think that you know, that's, I hear you, Andrew. I think that when you abuse people and you lie to them, you know, they're going to be angry. And I'm not saying January 6th was in any way justified or wise. It was not. But I think it was the expression of a lot of frustration that the left does not want us to look at its own role in helping to create.
Number three on the list is COVID-19 and how it is still spiraling out of control. More people have died of COVID-19 in 2021 than died in 2020. The Biden administration recently has not ordered enough tests. People have been waiting in line for up to 7 hours just to get tested. And Joe Biden, who claimed time and time again he wasn't going to shut down the economy, he was going to shut down the virus, is now trying to pass the buck to the to governors, it sounds like. It sounds like he doesn't think the federal government can do much more. Rob, what have been your thoughts on the ongoing COVID pandemic?
Well, as I said earlier on when I was talking about Joe Biden's failures, we now know that he agreed with President Trump and that it is the responsibility of the states to get this virus under control. We now know that he feels as if though we should have had more testing back in November. Remember, when this virus hit, Trump was starting from ground zero and trying to get people tested. And he was looking at the different areas. Okay, let's try this. It was almost methodical, logistically looking at these are the areas that we want to test first. But people gave him so much grief. No, everybody. Knowing that that was impossible, we needed to look at the most vulnerable, which is what he did. So he stayed the course and said, we're going to make certain that we get test kits out for these people, for these groups of people. Now, when he left office, unfortunately, again, he left behind the blueprint, the roadmap for Joe Biden and his so-called expert administration to follow. They disregarded everything because in their mind, he's a madman, he's racist, and we can't do any of this. Only now, toward the end of 2021, we know that Joe Biden is now looking at it and saying he was actually right. But we knew that all along. He was right about the border, making certain that the Mexican government keeps the people there. He was right about it. He was right about saying, no, the states need to handle this because they're state rights. We can't usurp our duties and say, no, you got to do what we want you to do. And not only that, again, he was given a roadmap. All he had to do was to follow it, and he did not. That is the reason why, with the Omicron variant that's running rampant, we don't have enough test kits. We don't have enough people that are testing, whereas our European counterparts and everyone else, they have it. They're mailing it out to people, but we don't, because back in October, Joe said that we didn't do it. We didn't need it. So where did all that money go that they had, that they gave to the different states?
It is what it is. And I know, just as a side note, Trump did an interview the other day with Candace Owens. And, it, you know, I think he very reasonably stated that, you know, he's not for mandates. He thinks it should be an individual choice, but that he worked very hard with the drug companies to expedite the manufacture of these, you know, vaccines. By the way, I've researched it and I don't believe that there was anything compromised in terms of the science. I think it was the red tape that was cut through. And anyway, Trump was talking about how of course he's not a scientist, but I think that his assessment is correct. You know, he said that really the people who get sickest with this tend to be the unvaccinated. That doesn't mean that no one who's vaccinated can get COVID, and it doesn't mean that the vaccines are perfect, but they do, you know, for what they're able to do, you know, they do pretty well. They do mitigate the severity of the illness, and he stands by them. And I think that, you know, I mean, there's always a very remote chance of a problem with anything that you take. And perhaps because it is new.
Heather, I don't want to cut you off, but okay. Save that thought, because later in our list, that conversation will be even more relevant. Number two, Joe Biden's Afghanistan disaster, 13 dead service members, not to mention all of our allies who helped us out all these years, completely stranded now at the hands of the Taliban, who are a completely well-armed army now, thanks to Joe Biden as well. This Afghanistan disaster will go down in history as one of the biggest foreign policy disasters in the history of our country. We spent all that time there, and to have an ending like this is just absolutely tragic. Rob, what were your thoughts on the Afghanistan disaster, as if I even have to ask?
Right. I'll keep this brief and I'll let Heather come in, but I've talked about this on just about every show. 13 soldiers killed, hundreds of Americans left behind, our artillery left in the hands of the enemy, simply because Joe wanted to have a victory lap on 9/11, which he was denied because our soldiers were killed. And for the media to just walk right over this, that is a huge story. And we should still be talking about it, because we don't leave Americans behind. We have Americans left behind, but we're going to bring over 50,000 Afghanistanians, and we didn't even clear them. We don't know who they are. Some of them don't want to be here. And then I think it was three of them who attacked an army cadet at a military base. Quiet as is kept. We heard about it and then nothing else. What exactly was Joe trying to do? Well, I'll tell you, they were trying to bring in new voters. 50,000 Afghanistanians, just imagine. That's more people than some cities within the United States. So if you were to put them all together, there's one huge voting block. You could create an entire town with those 50,000 people. This is what they want. And you're right, it was a huge, colossal failure. Shame on you, Joe Biden.
Yeah, it was clearly poorly handled. And you know, interestingly, the liberals I know, this is one of the few things that they will not defend. A lot of liberals are upset about it too, the Afghanistan withdrawal, which surprised me, to be honest with you. I mean, I know it's very upsetting and wrong, but so is a lot of what goes on, and, you know, why they see more clearly this one than other things, I don't know. The part about leaving all our weaponry there, you know, that was really impossible to understand. And, you know, I mean, that said, I do empathize with the desire to get our troops out of there already. But clearly the way it was done was very poor.
Yeah, it seemed very amateur. Now, Heather was just talking about our number one story, and that is COVID-19 vaccine and the mandates in particular. Heather was just talking about the science involved. And Heather, we will let you continue what you were saying about COVID-19 vaccine and what you have seen studying the science.
Well, I don't know if too many people are familiar with COVID-19, did you call it? Is that, you know, something that's been in the news? I'm being a little sarcastic there about the media's favorite virus. I say that, you know, not to make light of the suffering, God forbid, but to sort of put in perspective that there are a lot of different viruses and, you know, threats in the world, including the physical world, including the chemicals that saturate our water, the, you know, pesticides in our food, HPV virus, a bunch of other viruses that have killed tens of thousands of Americans, you know, that there's never really been much discussion about, but we've had you know, understandably, because this has cost many more lives and it's a more contagious thing. But I do think we were living in an age of, it is not the age of reason. A lot of hysteria, you know, a lot of panic. As you guys know, my views are pretty nuanced on this, I think. I mean, I understand why there needed to be a major public health effort here. You know, we have a wonderful, big, strong country full of people, including a lot of elderly, a lot of people with pre-existing conditions. That's part of what makes our country great. You know, we're not a callous country. We're not Nazi Germany. We're not an underdeveloped, backward place where people who are ill can't get good treatment. But as a result, we have a lot of people with vulnerabilities and comorbidities. And that's, I think, part of sometimes what our fellow conservatives maybe miss a little bit is, you know, they don't, I mean, they love their grandparents and disabled and, you know, compromised relatives, but they don't always link that to, one thing I do want to say real quickly is I do think we've had a lack of leadership in terms of, I just wish that, you know, certainly Biden and even President Trump, much as I liked him in so many ways, I think that from the start, if our elected officials had leveled with the American people a little better about what the real risks are to young people, to healthy people, the risks are very low to them for this, but they're very high to other people. And I think that the real thing that hasn't been done is to be honest about that, to make an appeal to Americans as patriots, to consider getting this vaccine, if not for themselves, for others. Not in a, you know, way that the left wants to shame and coerce, but to ask people. I think the vaccines are safe. I do think it's unfortunate that we have such fractiousness in our country. I think it's due to many things, but people distrust, you know, they distrust what the government says. And, you know, so now the crisis is augmented by that, because I think that this virus is mutating around the vaccines, but I think it has an easier time doing that when fewer people are vaccinated. And, you know, so I think we're going to be struggling with it for a while. That's in a nutshell what I think.
Yeah, thank you, Heather. It'll be interesting to see going into 2022 what happens with this COVID-19 and the vaccine. Hopefully it doesn't get much worse. We see a lot of deaths, certainly a lot of cases right now. It looks like probably going to be a record amount of cases here with the way this thing has been spreading as of late. Definitely prayers for anyone that has been suffering with COVID-19 or has any relatives that have. Thank you all for joining us once again tonight, and we all wish you a great and happy new year. We appreciate you joining in tonight and all year long on America Out Loud. Be sure to join us. Next year, 2022, is going to be a big year. Rob and I are going to have some big plans and some big shows for you guys. So be sure to check those out. Thank you for joining us tonight on After Dark with Rob and Andrew. Check us out and all the other shows over at AmericaOutLoud.com. We will see you guys next time. And remember, stand for something or you will fall for nothing.